You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Amazon's recent announcement it's backing out of its plans to set up a new headquarters in New York City prompted plenty of conversations about whether it is wise for cities to offer up all those tax incentives, all those goodies, in hopes of luring a big prize like Amazon and its 25,000 jobs. There's something else to consider, just what happened when colleges and universities reshaped themselves to suit the needs of a mega corporation such as Amazon. Jason Owen Smith is a sociology professor and executive director of IRIS, the Institute for Research on Innovation and Science at the University of Michigan. Good to have you here. So you wrote a piece in The Conversation exploring, and I'm quoting here, the perils of partnerships between higher education and business. How did you see that play out in this failed Amazon deal with New York City?
Well, I think Amazon offers a really visible case that points to some of the dangers. It also points to some of the possibilities. So I'm not someone who would argue that there shouldn't be partnerships between business and universities. I think it can be an important part of a university's mission. What the Amazon case shows us is the potential dangers of having universities link their work, particularly their teaching and research, too closely in too small a number of fields to the needs of a particular business or industry. I think the strength of universities, especially big research universities like the University of Michigan, is precisely in their diversity of activities and in the ability that gives them to connect with lots of different, sometimes conflicting stakeholders and constituencies, and they put that at risk when they narrow themselves or focus too closely on a single partnership.
And are you aware, did we see this happening? Let's start with New York, where, you know, oh, they're coming. There was the big announcement. Did we see some schools and universities around the New York area start to go, oh, we need to change. We need to modify.
I think we saw some of that in both New York and in Virginia.
Because we know they're also going to be in Arlington. So
right,
what, yeah,
exactly.
What are we seeing? What kind of courses and what kind of reaction from schools?
Well, so there are a couple of things. And again, these aren't bad on their face, but they raise questions for us about what a university should be and should do. So in Virginia, for instance, the state is putting a lot of new money into what a memo from UVA called Amazon-related fields.
Right? Such as
business, computer science, electrical engineering. Virginia Tech is opening a new $1 billion innovation campus just a few minutes from where the new Amazon headquarters will be. And that's going to focus exclusively on these fields and on particular areas like cybersecurity that are of real interest to Amazon. Which again is not a bad thing, unless in a time when budgets are stretched and states are disinvesting in their public university, it comes at the cost of some of the other stuff.
Yeah, and I know that's not just unique to Amazon, because in your piece for The Conversation, you tell the story of the University of California Berkeley's attempts to partner up with the big Swiss pharma company Novartis and with BP, the huge oil company. What happened there?
They're both famous instances where in trying to forge a partnership with a big company to do some shared research in both of these cases, the goal at Berkeley was to create research institutes that were joint with the company focused on agricultural biotechnology in the Novartis case and on environment, sustainability, and oil in the BP case. Both of those caused real concerns on campus about the autonomy of research, about the career directions of students who worked in these things. And they also point to one of the same things that the Amazon case in New York points to, the challenges of putting your eggs very significantly in a single basket with a company whose situation is going to change. So agricultural biotechnology went south. Novartis spun out the part of its company that was doing that. And as a result, you know, Berkeley's investment kind of was left hanging.
Okay.
At BP, oil prices went south. BP took its option to stop paying into the $100 million fund that it was going to. Berkeley was left hanging. That didn't happen in New York, obviously, because there wasn't enough time.
Yeah.
But one of the challenges here is that universities benefit from stability, and when they wed themselves to the business cycle very tightly, that makes things harder.
This raises questions, I guess, about what should be the true role of a university. And I think to those of us on the outside of the university, well, we kind of would say, well, gee, isn't the whole point of universities turn out graduates who can land jobs and meet the needs of a region's employers? Or are we missing something with that point of view?
The short answer is yes, they should do that. But that's not all they should do. So I just wrote a book. It's called Research Universities and the Public Good. And one of the things I argue is that we as a society make huge public investments in universities and a relatively small number of very big, very expensive, very diverse universities that are large, that educate the plurality of students, and that do the vast majority of federally funded research. Now, we do that for all kinds of reasons, most notably to sort of push forward the frontiers of human knowledge. But I think that the thing that we don't pay enough attention to is the idea that what these institutions represent is a kind of insurance against an uncertain future. So these universities, we invest in them, and they create conditions by developing new knowledge in lots of fields, by keeping it as open and publicly available as possible, by training people across all kinds of range of things, and by helping those people find jobs and later careers outside all over society, universities position themselves to be uniquely able to identify problems we don't know we have yet and to respond to them and to generate opportunities that we would have been hard-pressed to articulate. And so if we think about investing in universities and academic science and education, both in the short term with the goal of helping every student get the kind of job they want and having the kind of life they want as a professor, that's very important to me, but also in terms of thinking about how we create a social infrastructure that lets our society be more resilient in the face of a volatile future, that's when it becomes really important, I believe, to attend to the diversity of the types of knowledge work a university does, to its stability, to its ability to connect to lots of different parts of society rather than making it sort of focused on a single constituency.
Do you worry where that flexibility and that sense of being able to respond to future challenges, is that being lost with this real intense focus on STEM?
I think it is. Again, I would never argue that we shouldn't teach STEM and engineering. I think it's essential and really important. I've spent a career studying how it's important. I think we too often forget that STEM is a part of the liberal arts. Right. When people say liberal arts, I think the common thought is that that's just sort of the squishy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a sociologist. I fall right in
archaeology,
that.
Archaeology, museum science. Yeah.
Right. But the classical liberal arts also includes STEM. And so I think we want to teach that. We want to make sure that we are developing the knowledge and the workforce that can let us do this work. But what we miss is that being able to connect to lots of different groups in society, some of them you come to the university through non-STEM routes. So we don't want to skimp on social work and urban planning and the arts and culture because that's part of creating and sustaining a vibrant regional and national community. And it's also the case that some of the areas where universities can make connections because of this non-STEM knowledge are precisely the places where we might expect to see the problems that we want to be able to respond to. So part of the challenge is making sure not just that the universities are teaching and doing research in all these areas, but that inside the universities there are mechanisms for the areas to talk to each other. So creating even internally a big sense of haves and have-nots could be dangerous to this larger social insurance mission.
If you're running a university or institute of higher education and you look around and you see that mad scramble to land Amazon or in Wisconsin to land Foxconn, what's the moral of that story?
For me, the moral of the story is go ahead. You know, work with your local community and elected leaders to try to do that. But think about what uniquely an institution like your university can bring to the table. I would like to think that if New York universities, for instance, had reached out through their various channels to activist communities and to others, they could have provided a setting where Amazon and representatives of the city could have legitimately sat down and hashed out differences, and the result might have been a stronger regional engagement. And so absolutely, every university should be concerned about doing the very best it can by its students and about trying to make sure that its partners and communities benefit from its work. But we should take a long view and think about all of the ways that universities can make that happen rather than jumping to what's immediately visible right now.
Jason Owen Smith, sociology professor and executive director of the Institute for Research on Innovation and Science at the University of Michigan. You will find his piece on the Amazon pullout from New York City and the perils of partnerships between higher ed and business at theconversation.com. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks very much. That was fun.